Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is Wednesday, January 17th, 2024. We have three cases on our calendar today, all set for oral argument. This is the second of those three. This is A23-0808 in the matter of the application of Derek Olson LLC for a conditional use permit. We are recording this oral argument, and that recording will be available within the next day or two. However, no other recordings are allowed. This is also being live streamed as well, so parties can watch it in real time, obviously through Zoom. We appreciate you participating in this oral argument via Zoom. And each party will have 15 minutes, starting with appellant for initial arguments, and then appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal, if you so choose to use after. There is a timer in one of the squares indicating how much time you have. Please pay attention to that to make sure that you finished within the time frame allotted to you. And with that, counsel for appellant, you may begin by stating your name for the record and the party you are representing.
Thank you and good morning. May it please the court, counsel David Lebo. I am the attorney for Relator Derek Olson LLC. Your honors, Relator wants to expand and to vastly improve its dairy farming operation. It undertook extensive planning for a new feedlot and residence on a piece of property in rural Wabasha County that is zoned specifically for agriculture. As required by the Wabasha County zoning ordinance, it applied for a conditional use permit, and Wabasha County's zoning administrator personally prepared a memorandum which recommended approval of the application. He also suggested findings for the Wabasha County Planning Commission that indicated that traffic to the property would be minimal due to the nature of the business. The Wabasha County Planning Commission unanimously made all the findings provided for by the Wabasha County Zoning Ordinance, and it also unanimously recommended that the application be approved. But the Wabasha County Board of Commissioners denied the application. That's why we're before the court today.
Isn't everything the Planning Commission does simply a recommendation to the board?
Yes.
And so one of my questions regarding your argument is, you say that there are no standards because the standards are for the Planning Commission to analyze and not the county board. But at the end of the day, the Planning Commission doesn't have any actual authority. The authority rests with the board. And so why aren't those standards that the county board also needs to evaluate before deciding whether to vote yay or nay on approving a conditional use permit?
Because the language of the ordinance expressly applies only to the Planning Commission rather than to the board.
Well, it requires the Planning Commission to make those findings, but at the end of the day, the board decides whether or not it agrees with the findings of the Planning Commission. The Planning Commission actually has no authority.
Well, the Planning Commission has a statutory requirement under 394.301 to consider the application in the first instance. And the ordinance requires that the Planning Commission consider it. Now, Your Honor, you're right that it does not give the ordinance does not give the Planning Commission final authority, but it gives it the authority to consider the application, to make these findings, to make these recommendations.
And if the county board disagrees with it, then they can deny those findings. The county board can deny the permit.
Sure.
And so why aren't those standards that are valid for the county board to be applying?
Because the ordinance, I don't think, can be read beyond what it actually says by its terms, which is that the Planning Commission must apply the standards. Nothing in that chapter, nor elsewhere, as far as we've been able to determine, binds the board to even consider the standards. And frankly,
but what about 18.04 of the ordinance that says that upon receipt of the report of the Planning Commission, the Board of County Commissioners shall make a decision upon the application for a conditional use permit? And the application process is laid out there from 18.02, including and beyond 18.05, which is the standards that the Planning Commission applies to the application. So why isn't that incorporated into the mandatory language of the ordinance that requires the board to make a decision on that application?
Well, Your Honor, I think we would look at it almost exactly in a mirror image of that. The board knows how to write its ordinances to provide for a process by which it is required to take action. But it has chosen not to require that it even consider the same standards that the Planning Commission would apply. Now,
Council, can I stop you there? Because that just seems like your interpretation of the ordinance and its application would lead to an absurd result, because it would only require the Planning Commission to take into account the factors outlined by the ordinance, but allow the county board to completely disregard them, not take that into account. How can that be? Because the county board is reviewing the recommendation from the Planning Commission, including the consideration of the ordinance's factors that it laid out. Inherent in that is that the county board can also look at those factors to make sure that the Planning Commission did its job and whether or not those factors have been appropriately considered, right?
It certainly can do so, but I don't think it's bound to. And that's
right, a situation. But that's a semantic that's an important difference. Is it's not the county board is not required to, but that doesn't mean the county board can't look at those factors. They certainly can consider those factors, right?
Sure. Now let me answer that in two parts, Your Honor. One is that in Zilka, which is one of the key cases that both sides have cited, the Supreme Court recognized more than 50 years ago that this situation often occurs, that when a board or a city council or something like that has the final authority, it often doesn't specify standards for itself, as opposed to a planning commission, which these bodies don't give kind of plenary standardless authority to. But the other point that I have is that the board doesn't once mention its own ordinance in considering the application. It never considers these factors by name, even I think by fair implications. And the only times the word ordinance appears in the transcript of that.
But factor six is whether other factors bearing on the public health, safety, and welfare would dictate either approval or grant of the conditional use permit. And isn't that almost exactly the language that the commissioner used in the letter informing your client of the denial of the conditional use permit?
Well, I have two answers to that as well, Your Honor. One is that approval or grant doesn't actually give the board or the planning commission discretion to deny it. That is what the language says. Respondent's brief tries to modify that kind of quietly, but approval or grant does not leave room for denying it on that factor. The second, and the court, I think, isn't empowered to rewrite that statute to correct an apparent absurdity in it. The other point that I have on that is that, that letter is not something that the board ever approved, that the board ever even saw, as far
okay,
as
okay, I want to go back, but I want to go back to what's the your argument about whether there's an absence of the standard. Don't we, regardless of whether we implement we say that the ordinance is imputed to the county board, don't we have case law that says that the county can deny a CUP if the application endangers the public health, safety, or general welfare, and essentially that's imputed as a basis, regardless of what the ordinances say, that's imputed as a basis. And I think if you look at the record, that at least one of the commissioners does point to that as the Hall Roads, the failure to identify the Hall Roads and to identify how traffic is going to flow from this project without more specific information, that was endangering the public health, safety, or general welfare of the surrounding community. So I guess to be more specific, regardless of the ordinance, there is legal authority, common law legal authority, for the county to deny the cup.
I think that there certainly is as a backup. So if the ordinance doesn't apply, then we go back to this two-factor question, or this two-part question of, does it, does the application, does the proposed conditional use permit meet the general usage of the area? And I don't think there's any dispute here about that. And then the second part is, as you say, Your Honor, whether the public health, safety, or welfare would be
under RD&T, isn't the two factors whether the board gave a legally sufficient reason, and if they did give a legally sufficient reason, whether there's a factual basis in the record. So if we look at the legally sufficient basis as public health, safety, and welfare, then the question would be whether there's a factual record to support that this project endangered the public health, safety, or welfare of the community under RD&T.
I think I'm having a little bit of trouble just sort of lining up those steps. I think that regardless of whether the ordinance applies or whether we go back to this backup common law test of public health, safety, welfare, that the court needs to look beyond that reasoning to the legally sufficient and factually sufficient pieces of this. Yes, if I'm understanding your question correctly.
So in other words, the legal sufficiency in that two-step analysis under RD&T, two-step analysis, one is whether it's legally sufficient. The argument is being made that it could be either under the ordinance, which talks about factor number six, of other factors bearing on the public health, safety, and welfare, or common law, case law, which is consistent with that, or both. So then isn't it really an issue of whether or not there's a factual basis to support the decision by the agency? And I just want to highlight that it's an agency decision. So our review is very limited because of the separation of powers issue that we have here. So we give great deference to the agency's decision.
Yes, the court does give deference to the decision. Now, the court gives, I think, less deference to the decision when, as here, the agency has failed to explain its reasons. And that's something that I want to emphasize is that...
But isn't that, I mean, that's a different argument. So, I mean, the way I see this case is you have, well, I mean, three, but I guess we're focusing on two right now, given the time, is one, did the agency make sufficient findings for us to actually evaluate whether the two prongs are met, and then two, whether this decision was unreasonable, arbitrary, or capricious, meaning did they provide a legally sufficient reason and does the record support it? And I see those as two analytically different questions. Am I right about that?
I think there's sort of two different, in some ways, yes. So if the board did not give adequate answers, then there's a presumption that applies that the decision was arbitrary, capricious, or unreasonable. If it did give legally adequate reasons, then the court has to look at those reasons and then the factual basis for it.
So is your argument that if they didn't make, I just want to make sure I understand. So your argument is if they didn't make reasonable findings, that the appropriate remedy is that we should issue the cup and not remand for additional findings, which is, yes. I mean, which is really different than other areas of administrative law, where if there are not sufficient findings, the remedy is to remand for the agency to make actual findings.
Yes, I think that the concern here, and this has been borne out again and again in the case law, is that there's going to be post hoc justification.
But that would be an argument for the next appeal.
I don't think that's correct, Your Honor. I
don't think that we can decide there aren't adequate findings, but we're going to grant the permit because we're concerned the county might use post hoc rationalizations. as opposed to clarifying based on the record from the hearing what its bases were. I don't think that we can make that decision at this stage.
I think that's the whole foundation of this doctrine of prima facie arbitrariness. If the board didn't explain itself, it's presumed arbitrary, and the burden shifts to the board to show why it isn't. And the lack of findings is here, I think, kind of, you know, it really sort of backfires on the board, and that we do have this verbatim transcript, which might not have been true for a similar case, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago. And yet, even looking in this 600-page record, this, you know, dozens of pages of transcripts of the Planning Commission hearings and the board hearing, we still don't see any unanimity and certainly any statement from the board as a board.
Certainly wasn't unanimity because it was a 4-1 vote.
Well, but even among, you know, and we, I think, have a kind of a big fight about this in our brief and respondents' brief and our reply about the idea that the transcript doesn't disclose some of the members' positions, but even among the members it does. Council member Wobey, I think, says this is incomplete. If I might just finish my answer, this is an incomplete application. Whereas Chair Springer says, this is an application that I am satisfied is not meeting a public health, safety, welfare standard. And thus, you know, they don't agree among themselves.
Judge Reyes, may I ask one clarifying question?
Yes, you may.
It seems to me that the way that this normally works is that under Robert's rules, you look at what the motion was. And I think that if you look at the motion in this case, the motion was pretty clear that the moving commissioner, who I think is later identified as Bob, that the concern, his reason for moving to deny the cup was based on the Hall Roads, the township concerns with the Hall Roads, and that your clients had simply not provided the information to ensure that the Hall Roads were going to be protected. So that's the motion. You then get a second, and then at the opportunity for discussion, that's where one might amend the motion, which there was no motion to amend. So why can't we just look at the initial motion and the fact that that's what the parties moved for, and then the fact that you have the 4-1 a nay, and that's what the motion is. So the motion is there's inadequate information on the Hall Roads, and therefore we should deny the cup. So the other discussion with respect to the second wasn't a formal motion to amend the initial motion. Isn't that how it works at, I mean, that's my general understanding of how it works at the county board meetings.
I'm not aware of any support for that kind of idea in case law. And I think that to the extent that there might be some presumption of the way that that would work, it kind of as a default, I think that this long statement that is completely at odds with in sort of the course of the second, that's really almost entirely irreconcilable with the motion, rebuts any kind of presumption like that. These boards are required by law to make findings, and there is no, you know, and those don't need to be sort of district court style, district court depth findings. But there needs to be some reasoning that's reported, and that just doesn't exist here.
Thank you, counsel. And you all have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Counsel for respondent, you have 15 minutes. Please be cognizant of your time, and please state your name for the record and the party you are representing, and you may begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Jason Kubushek on behalf of the Wabasha County Board of Commissioners. The court really has hit on the seminal issues in this case. First is, you know, what standard applies? And although the realtor would like you to believe that it's not the standards contained in the county ordinance, when you actually look back at the applicable statute, 394.301, it places the burden on the applicant to show that the standards and criteria stated in the ordinance will be satisfied. So it falls on the applicant to show that these standards contained in section 18.05 are met, and that was not done. The record shows that—
Council, can we start with what I would consider sort of point one in the analytical framework here, which is whether or not the board has provided adequate findings? Because I do think that appellant has a point that it's somewhat challenging to target what specifically the board was relying on when it denied the motion to grant the cup. And so can you just respond to why the statements at the hearing are sufficient and why the appropriate remedy isn't to remand for the county to make more specific findings?
Sure. Well, and I would first say that obviously I think the evidence does support it, but if the court finds that there isn't evidence in the record, remand is applicable. I know the realtor would say, you just have to say it's arbitrary and capricious, but remand is the correct standard. But I do feel, going back to that initial motion, it is to deny until we have a complete application. And the rest of the hearing is all testimony and evidence regarding the lack of the haul roads. There were criteria that were, or excuse me, were conditions set forth by the Planning Commission move forward. And you know, the Olsons indicated they would provide the information as regard to these haul roads and how it affects the road. So we have testimony regarding the lack of the haul roads. We've got the manure incidents. There's some access issues there. And this all comes in, and ultimately it gets tied together when at the very end, Commissioner Springer talks about, you know, that this is the public health safety issue, and that it has significant impacts on the public roads, and that they're seconding in this because it's incomplete. We know so there's issues here.
I mean, this is the thing that's confused me about this. Is your argument that the denial was based on the record being incomplete, the application being incomplete, or is your argument that they denied this permit because of a problem with the public health, safety, and welfare? Because I think that those are two different things. And I think arguably different standards apply if the reason for denying the application is that it's not complete, right?
I would respectfully disagree, because I think they are related in that the public health and safety, as we've noted in our brief, goes the public roads, the right-of-way, and the statutes. And the issues that have evolved from prior actions by the Olsons with regard to those roads, the concerns by the townships regarding those roads, and the incompleteness of this haul road is, you know, we're trying to figure out exactly which roads would be affected. You know, if they had provided that information, could it have been alleviated or been concerned or through the conditions? But without even identifying the haul roads, it's incomplete. We know we've got an issue. We can't fix that issue until you tell us exactly what roads you're going to be on. So
isn't that the way the administrator put it in the letter, in the May 5th, 2023 letter? The reason for denial was not just that the public health, safety, and welfare were at risk, but they were not adequately addressed by the applicant. So it seems to be framed in terms of the application being lacking. Is that your position?
It is, with regard to the roads and the issues with the roads. They just were never addressed, even though—
But does the issue with the roads, is that even part of the application? I mean, the way I understand is that the blank with the roads had to do with a condition that was placed by the Planning Commission at the first meeting, and then they asked the applicant to fill in the blank. I mean, that's not part of the initial application identifying the haul roads. Really, what we're talking about is the Planning Commission recommended condition with respect to the haul roads, asked the applicant to identify the haul roads, and the applicant refused to identify the haul roads related to that specified condition, right? So that's different than completing the initial application, right?
With regard to the actual application itself, I would agree that is true. With regard to the information the county needs to make its determination, I think that they needed to supply that information regarding the haul roads.
Yeah, I guess I'm trying to distinguish between that there's a difference between the completeness of the initial application and whether the applicant has a continuing burden to provide the information to the county relevant for them to make their decision. I think that those are probably both valid, but that they're slightly different things and that different standards might apply, whether what you're talking about is the initial application itself, is that final, or do you need to give them an opportunity to revise it, versus the Planning Commission has specifically asked you for this information prior to the county board making its final decision, because the county board isn't able to make its decision without that information. I think that those are somewhat different analytically.
I would agree with that. And I think that with regard to the actual application document itself, that was ultimately completed. They supplied some supplemental information because they delayed the process. But the information the county board needed to make its decision was not provided. And that's what was discussed at the Planning Commission meeting. And Olson's had said they would provide it. And ultimately, when it got to the county board, they said they didn't provide it. And so that
falls under 18.04 of the ordinance, where the commission may designate conditions and require guarantees deemed necessary for the protection of the public interest. That's what empowered the commission to make that recommendation and request that supplemental information.
Yes, that's right, Your Honor. And it's also contained within the statute itself, 394.301 subdivision 2, that allows them to impose additional restrictions or conditions that deemed necessary to protect the public interest. So I think
you see the haul routes is separate and distinct from the initial requirement for information about driveways, access roads, parking spaces, off-street loading, sidewalks, and utilities, because it really goes more to how are trucks and heavy vehicles going to be accessing the property on the public streets rather than access to the property itself, right?
Right. I think you're referring to 18.05 paragraph 3, where it talks about the access roads and that type of thing. Whereas we're looking at paragraph 6, the public health safety, which is the effect they have actually on the roads. And in the evidence we had in the record that there had been spills in the past, the acknowledgement that silage can be spilled during the fall. So there's all these factors that affect the actual roads themselves.
But to Judge Larson's point, your counterpart cites Yang versus County of Carver, and in Yang there were pretty detailed findings that the county had made about that the county had made, and their decision to deny the CUP was reversed by this court, largely it seems to me because one of the bases for denying the CUP was just relying on public comment, anecdotal public comment. So how do you distinguish Yang from this case when this case seems to have heavily relied on public comment about the relator not being a good neighbor?
I think the distinction, and I would highlight the three of the cases really that deal with the public comment in roads. It's the Yang Carver County, we've got the RDNT City of Bloomington, and then we also mentioned the Whited Township Knife River case. I had the opportunity to be on all three cases. And so the distinction is in Yang, this was a proposed kind of slaughterhouse type situation. There was no experience. It was really neighbors that were just opposed to a completely different and new use in the area. And they were making accusations without any concrete evidence. Now you counter that with RDNT, and RDNT is probably one of the better CUP records that we've had, because you had evidence from the city highway engineer. You had traffic consultants for the applicant that said the roads can handle this type of traffic use. It can handle the parking situation. But yet you had neighbors come in from that neighborhood with photographs. And they had photographs showing the parking along the street, showing the big trucks trying to come in there to deliver food services or ambulance getting down there. And so the council there was able to weigh out the expert testimony regarding very concrete information from neighbors who are experiencing it, not just speculating on what could happen. And there, and that increased use just couldn't handle it. And so the court said, nope, you know, you could rely on the public input. Similarly, in Whited Township, you know, there was a gravel pit. There had been one there in the past. Neighbors that had experienced that said, hey, we had dust issues. They didn't maintain the road like they said they were going to. We've got road issues. And again, that's concrete information and evidence. So I think that's how you differentiate Yang from RDNT and even the Whited Township. And in this case, we've got photographs. We've got very specific information from people that live in the area that have dealt with the Olson's current use. It's not speculative. It is current facts, actual facts. And so therefore, I would say it was proper for the county board to rely upon that evidence. Even if the Olson's own expert said, hey, we don't think traffic's going to be an issue. When you weigh that evidence, which, you know, the board has the ability to weigh it, they found that the evidence from the public outweighed that of the expert. So that's how we believe the evidence shows that, you know, there is issues with these roads.
And I think to make a different finding would make, I think that to adopt appellant's reasoning would make having public comments sort of irrelevant. And I think that it's pretty clear in the case law that it's, that the board has an obligation to take into account public comments, particularly ones where the concerns raised are, you know, supported by evidence like photos, et cetera.
I would agree with Your Honor. So, really, I have no other arguments have set forth the reasons we believe the county board decision should be affirmed, and we'd ask the court to do that.
Thank you, counsel.
Can I ask one question? Outside of your, I understand that you have the argument that presumptive arbitrariness maybe doesn't exist anymore. Setting that argument aside, could you just give me your perspective on how the case law in RDNT with the legally sufficient reason with a basis in the facts, how that intersects with the case law regarding presumed arbitrariness if there aren't adequate findings?
Sure, I would argue that the burden falls on the applicant to show that the standards have been met or can be met. That's not done. We've found that insufficient evidence was presented, and the motions and testimony from the board affirm that. It was a 4-1 vote. And then ultimately the letter informing the applicant as to reasons for denial set forth the reason, the public health safety. They're at the meeting. So I think that they have had sufficient notice as to the reasons for the board's determination, and that has met, it's not arbitrary. They know what the determination was based upon. They may not like it, but they know it. And so, you know, arbitrary is where, you know, unknown standards, unknown factors are applied against them. Here, known factors, known standards were applied in this case. They have the ability to challenge, which they did. So we feel that the county board met its obligation.
Thank you, counsel. I see no other questions. Counsel for respondent, you will have 5 minutes for your rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I want to note again that the staff findings were that access roads were or would be adequate from the very beginning. The planning commission's findings.
I mean, aren't you asking you know, it's part of your argument in your brief, and, you know, you talk about the agriculture expert's testimony. It seems to me like you're asking us to reweigh some of the evidence. And I understand it's your position that there aren't really findings for us to review and rely on here based on the comments of the individual commissioners. But if we disagree with you, in order to find that there wasn't a, you know, a basis in the record to support the legally sufficient grounds to deny the CUP, do we need to reweigh the evidence? Or are you asking us to do that?
No, because I don't think there's any evidence on the other side in terms of road use, road damage, the kinds of things that the board is now relying upon.
Well, and you well, look at counsel, how do you respond to your counterpart's arguments that we have testimony before the board, we have photographs which were included in the briefing as well as being part of the record? Why isn't that sufficient to show a factual basis for the board's decision?
So I think because this isn't just an operation that's going to grow in place on the same conditions as it exists now. The whole point of this conditional use application permit, the whole point of this project is to avoid some of the issues that the board has used as justification to deny the improvement, which is, in our view, almost per se arbitrary, capricious, or unreasonable. The whole point
isn't the argument on the other side that the really the lack of evidence lies with your client with regard to the failure to introduce the requested haul routes information? And because, you know, that's to me one of the distinguishing factors with Yang, in that in Yang the county relied on public comment and only the traffic information that was provided by the relator himself. And that's what was determined to be error. And in this case, you know, the commission asked your clients to produce this information to address what apparently became a health, safety, and welfare concern regarding the use of these roads. And that information wasn't presented. And so on the other side, we had all this anecdotal evidence in public comment about manure spillage on the roads and the use of the easements and whatnot, and that went unanswered. And so, how do you respond to that?
Yeah, so I think that Yang and also RDNT are great examples, and I appreciate that the court has brought them up because they talk about specific road use calculations, analysis, expert review, and here it's almost all just a blank. Well, we're concerned. We're worried about road use. How many trips will there be? How many, you know, of those will be heavy trucks? How does that compare to current use? It is likely, in our view, based on the testimony, and I think this is the only testimony, that road use may well be down from what it is today.
Because go ahead.
I mean, you're using the word may, and it was your burden to present the evidence to show what this would be. I mean, that's the county's argument.
Yeah.
And you're using the word may when you had multiple opportunities to present the evidence as to that there was going to be reduced road use, et cetera.
Yeah. And the findings in our view are all that the access roads were adequate, that was shown that, you know, it's not reasonable to say that reduced road usage on a nearly 1,000 animal units operation that requires a conditional use permit.
Where in the record shows that your clients showed to the satisfaction of the county board that there was going to be reduced road usage? I understand that you want to focus on the change in the manure management practices, but I think that if you look at the county board's testimony, they're not as concerned about manure management practices as much as they are by increasing the size of this dairy, you're going to have additional heavy truck traffic. And where are you planning? What are the routes that you're planning? And you're going to have additional crops necessary to feed the animals. And so what are the routes that you're intending to use so that we can evaluate what the impact will be, whether there's going to be higher or lower amounts of truck volume outside of the manure management practices, which I agree with you are fundamentally different between these two proposed facilities?
Yeah. So I think they're part of that is that the improved manure management, by virtue of the status quo, reduces road use for that purpose. But also,
but increasing animal units will increase truck traffic for collecting the milk, having more food for a larger herd of animals, right? Like there's a,
but Your Honor, those numbers are out there. Ms. Olson spoke at the board meeting, and I think at both, at least the second planning commission meeting, and discuss traffic. That those numbers are out there, and there's no counter.
And at the planning commission, they asked your client to identify which roads they were intending to use, and your client declined the opportunity to do so. I mean, that's the record that we're stuck with.
Yes, and our position on that condition in particular is that it's unreasonable based on the record to identify halt to require the use of specific haul routes when a member of the board said there's a first time for everything.
Well, that question isn't before us because your client wasn't granted a permit.
I think if the reason, well, it goes to the reason for the denial. If the permit application was denied on a basis that was unreasonable, the lack of haul routes, if the need for identified specific immovable haul routes is in itself unreasonable, then denying it on that ground is also unreasonable.
Any other questions from the panel? Okay. Thank you, counsel. Thank you both for your oral arguments and your written submissions. We will be taking the matter under advisement and issuing an opinion within the 90-day statutory timeframe. Thank you both.